This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It has just passed 6 a.m. It's Thursday, January 27th, and it's just like a few more days before we get to Chinese New Year Eve.
I'm very excited, but I'm also very angry because prior to this, we were having conversations about ang pao collections and giving, and I realized I got the short end of the straw, I feel.
Why are you angry when I'm the one who have to give ang pao and you're just receiving?
Okay, by the way, that was the voice of Philip C, and that was Tan Chen Li, and I'm Wong Xiaoning, and we are the crew that's going to take you to 10 a.m. on The Morning Run. So, Philip, continue your stories. Why you feel so angry?
Well, no, it's like, you know, we're just thinking about ang pao collections and ang pao giving, and because it's a pandemic lockdown, it's unlikely you're going to meet a lot of relatives, so collections are going to be dry this year, in my view.
So you want the big ones, right?
I want the big kahunas.
Big ones.
Yeah.
Okay, Chen Li, do you get that message?
No.
Loud and clear.
What's your address, Chen Li? Can we go and visit you?
We'll see her on the Thursday after we come back from Chinese New Year. We can collect
it on the spot.
Save
on logistics and transportation costs.
Exactly.
Great.
But you know, I'm curious for you all out there, what kind of ang paos are you going to give this year, and what kind of ang paos have you been receiving, and does inflation at all mean anything?
Absolutely. So I want to remind all my uncles and aunties out there, US inflation 7%, okay?
And officially even in Malaysia is more than 3%, and I think that's that is not a real number. So let us know. You can tweet in at BFM Radio, that's our handle, and of course you can WhatsApp in 018-789-8899. We really would like to know what is the range in Malaysia, but I think at the end of the day, we do have to say, it's the thought that counts, right?
Sure.
You're definitely
very, very skeptical. But nonetheless, we've got a very interesting packed show. We're going to do a little bit about, you know, get a little channel check in terms of how businesses are doing as we head into the Chinese New Year. And we're also going to find out what is the conditions like at the hospitals because of COVID-19, whether there's a backlog of cases. But we're going to take a break for a song. And I think it's Stay This Way by the brand new heavies. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that was Stay This Way by the brand new heavies. It's 6:07, and of course you're listening to The Morning Run. Philip, you're dying to say something.
I just really hope my ang pao doesn't stay this way.
You want it to be inflation adjusted and a plus, right?
Absolutely, Xiaoning.
And a plus.
For being a good son, good friend, whatever, right? Just take that into consideration during this pandemic.
But I'm just wondering, is anybody listening?
Not at 6:08. It's futile, isn't it, this conversation?
Is your mother listening? Are your aunts listening? Are your friends listening? Or you're just talking to the void?
You have to repeat this conversation at like 10 or something.
I hope we podcast this and send this out to them.
Yeah, we can. But we're talking about something money related, actually. And it's an article in The Economist about tipping. And do tips make for better service? And I think this is extremely useful in today's day and age, partially because, do you realize, guys, when you use any of the apps, be it Grab or Foodpanda, you can now elect to tip your driver.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
And of course, tipping has been around for forever and ever and ever, especially in places like America, where it's something, I think...
it's a compulsory thing to do.
It's not compulsory, but I think it's...
Societal norm.
Yeah, societal norm.
Yeah, I have... When I was studying there, I have a very interesting experience there. So, as usual, you know, I tipped them, and that week, and I left the restaurant, and the waitress actually came out and chased after me and said, "Ma'am, you actually have to tip more than this." Because, they say that you have to tip like a 10% or something. Like, it was like so long ago. I cannot remember what was the rate. She actually came out and chased me down and said, like, "You have to give me more." And
It happened to me in New York also.
Which
I wasn't very happy about because I had counter service. I didn't have table service.
Okay. Well, then I guess with all this electronic money transactions and all that, all this will come to pass, isn't it?
No, I knew it. Okay, I think we have to understand the system, how the system works in America. They basically, in a restaurant, underpay their staff, and they expect the tips to cover the fact that they underpay their staff. And there is a system in the house whereby a certain percentage goes to the front of the house, and then it flows to even the dishwashers. Okay.
Yeah, correct.
So it's very organized in America. Now, in Malaysia, I think because we have service charge, we don't really have to tip, especially if they already put in 10% into the bill. And what bugs me nowadays is even if you do take away, where there really isn't any service, they impute it into it. And sometimes I feel like asking a restaurant, why are you charging me for this? It's not container charges, you know, it's service charged. And there's a difference.
Correct.
But this article asks you, do you think you get better service when you do tip? And let me find out, do you think so, Chenley?
In some cases, yes. Maybe like if I don't have to tip at the end of a service, I think maybe I would get better service if I tip beforehand. But in general, I am not a very big fan of tipping.
Why? Are you a cheapskate?
Must be. Huh? Like me, cheapskate.
Yeah, cheapskate.
Don't expect ang pao from
super
me.
Super kiam. Okay. All right, your turn, Philip C.
Well, I actually, as a general rule of principle, try not to tip, I have to say.
Another kiam one in the room.
Well, okay, for the basic reason, especially in Malaysia, I really don't know how they distribute the tip. As you say, right, in the US, there is a process in which they make sure that it's not only the waiter, but it's also to the back end of the restaurant and the chefs. In Malaysia, I'm quite nervous whether there is that system in place when you get the tip. Because sometimes for me, like when I go to a restaurant, especially if I don't frequent it so often, I must know very carefully whether or not the tip is being distributed properly to the back end, because it's also not about the service, but it's about the food as well. So for me, that's my big question mark. And as you know, you're saying, Shaoning, about Grab, right? As we said, I'd rather try not to tip it through the system. I rather tip it if it's a great driver in person. But to be fair, I've not really had great service so far on our mobile.
I'm a opposite of y'all. I do believe in tipping. To me, it's like a little mini reward. And I can tell you the Malaysian culture is that not one of tipping. Because when I do tip, people are surprised. Especially the food delivery guys, okay? Because what they'll do is that sometimes, you know, they'll just put the food on the gate, near the gate.
True.
And then they want to drive off. And then I will say, hey, bang, bang, bang. And then they'll look at me, tunggu, tunggu, tunggu. And then they'll look at me, like, did they forget something? And then I attempt to give them some money. And then they seem so surprised. So clearly, we don't have this kind of tipping culture in Malaysia. And I think...
We don't, right?
And shouldn't we reward good service when it is good service?
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I think for me, it's especially like, especially in the rain, especially if they
go beyond their
means to do it, right?
Exactly.
It is, you make a very valid point. So if you pay in person, I wouldn't go through the electronic system.
Okay, I actually do tip them when it's a rainy day and they have to deliver my food, but I do it through the system.
I just worry that the system will just dilute it all. And I don't know what the intention of the tipping is through the system, right? You know, in my insidious
cynical mind,
I'm thinking it's like, oh, I'm paying so that I get, maybe I'm in a better queue next time. Then it's the wrong intention and wrong incentive structure.
Yeah, I just have a bottle of $1 notes near my door and I just go in and pick up a few.
A little bottle of notes.
So that I always remember. But I think also if I was in their shoes and I was delivering stuff, or I was a waiter, or I was a bellboy, I think I would like these tips, right? It will make my day. At the end of the day, when I clock off and I have like 10, 20 ringgit, hey, why not? And I think people should be rewarded for good service.
Yeah, that's right. But then in some countries, it's actually not acceptable to tip.
Because Japan is one.
Correct, yes. They will feel insulted. Why are you tipping me? Am I like a beggar or something? You know, some people take it wrongly.
Well, yeah. I think it depends on
some
the culture.
Yes, correct.
But there's
also some culture, like say in Indonesia, you're expected to tip.
Yes. And I think for me, it's when you tip it is also very important.
Yes.
And you know, as we know, Shaoning, you were saying that in the hotels, right, it's okay to do it at the start of the journey.
Yeah, because you want everyone to know that you are generous and then they will always open the door for you.
Yeah. And then you also kind of reward and recognize it in the process.
Well, we're heading into a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking about something rather interesting on whether you have a form of OCD. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that was Wild Blue by John Mayer. It's 6:19 in the morning and you're listening to The Morning Run with Philip C, Chen Li and myself, Wong Shaoning. Now, we've got a video this time, not an article, and it's from the BBC. BBC!
Shaoning, can you not do a chuang and try and have all these terrible accents? You totally failed and missed the mark on that one.
I apologize. I just couldn't help myself. I was just like, it's like Cheeky Thursday, right?
I know. It's like, yeah, no problem.
Okay,
good attempt.
Well, it's about scrupulosity and it's the obsessive fear of not being good enough. And
yes.
I believe, Chen Li, you chose this story. Why? Tell us why Why did this thing call out to you? Why did this video mean so much to you?
Well, actually, I came across this one, and although scrupulosity is also sometimes called religious scrupulosity, but it's actually not so religion related. It doesn't have to be.
Its origins are religious, in the 21st century,
it's a form of
OCD, right?
Correct. About how obsessive you are of being a parent or being an employee or being a good citizen, you know, and then you'll be thinking over and over again, am I making mistakes?
Yep.
Am I doing it right? You know, so, and then you just go over and over and over again, just like how we are on air sometimes.
Yes, I think there is that imposter syndrome that you're referring to. And if you look at the word scrupulosity, the root word is scrupulous, and it really is essentially being very concerned to avoid doing wrong.
Correct. Right?
Very concerned to avoid doing wrong. And I think many of us who have a deeper conscience have some level of scrupulosity, I'm sure.
I hope so,
right?
Because you don't have a moral compass, right? Or like, you know, you don't know what's the difference between right and wrong, for
absolutely,
example.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's absolutely important to do it, but it's just at a certain time, this may be too excessive for some people, or it overtakes you, overwhelms you. But I think it's healthy to have a bit of this as well.
I think so too. So sometimes at work or if you don't have this feeling, then you'll be like, I don't think you'll be performing very well, right?
Yeah. So according to this article, or you have found out, Chanit, what, 2% of the population experience OCD. I think all of us have shades. Okay, let's define OCD. It's a medical condition, all right? So
correct.
This is when it is quite severe, and it's probably having an impact on your daily life, okay? So, for example, there are quite a few people who unfortunately have this obsession with germs, right? And they're constantly washing their hands. They're constantly wiping down everything. And we're not even talking during the COVID period. Yeah. It was pre-COVID, right?
Yes.
And it becomes something so difficult that it actually prevents them from having a normal life. So that's really the definition of OCD. But I think we all have shades of it.
Yes, that's right. And I wonder if the pandemic actually make more people to become OCD or, you know, more obsessive about cleanliness, about germs and bacteria, you know, because this is something that concerns a lot of people, right?
Yeah,
but I think it's germs is just one part, right?
Yeah,
more than that.
Correct. So I think when we talk about OCD, we always think about it as hygiene, like physical hygiene.
Yes.
But this scrupulosity is actually mental hygiene, which is really your values, that you feel you hold yourself to a much higher standard of values. So, I mean, for a person, and you talk religious, I mean, for me, like my Catholic childhood and upbringing, right, also instilled a lot of values. And so
values of guilt.
I have huge amounts of guilt, to be fair. I mean, I'll be very honest and upfront. Like, let's say if I go on dating apps, right? I feel
the guilt,
seriously.
Really?
Because, you know, as a Catholic, you think, okay, no, there are certain values or certain religious beliefs that you have to uphold. Mm-hmm. And when I scroll through a dating app, I have so much guilt.
Because
it feels it goes against my religion, whether I rightly or wrongly believe it, but there is that
and
tension.
And you haven't even done anything yet, right?
I haven't done anything.
I'm just scrolling.
So you're just, the act of swiping left and right or up and down makes you feel incredibly guilty.
Absolutely. So I think this is where it's even more dangerous, right? Because it really is going up against your moral values, what you think is right and wrong. And you hold yourself to such an incredibly high standard
that
it suffocates you, absolutely.
Yes, yes.
But you know what? I think some people could do with a bit of scrupulosity.
Oh, yes.
Right? In Malaysia, for sure. And I'm thinking, siapa tu? Who would actually do with a little bit of that? It would make society so much better, right? Things would go better. You know, people might actually resign when they're supposed to resign, for example. So I think it's something that some people in this world should adopt.
So I do agree with you. I think that certain amount of self-awareness about your gaps and deficiencies is so core. And this is where I firmly believe that you hold your values firmly but not tightly. Be willing to let go. Be willing to be kinder to yourself. And that, I think, is very key to basically moving and progressing forward. Because if these moral values stop you from trying, experimenting and moving forward, it's going to be hard to learn and grow.
Yeah, and it suffocates you after a while, right? Mm-hmm. And then, but you know what? I think, I don't know whether we can generalize. Do you think it's partially because we're Asians? We joke about the Asian parenting and
the
then the Asian
moms.
Guilt, right?
Yes.
The tiger mom and all that. So I wonder whether it's harder for us to let go sometimes.
Yeah, it's not just we ourselves. Sometimes you think about what the other people think of you also, like being Asian, you're like, am I doing this that fits with the
Absolutely.
Rest of the people? Yeah.
Well, so, let us know whether you are held down by this scrupulosity, whether you have actually been able to shake free from it. Give us your tips. Let us know. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. That's our handle. Or you can WhatsApp in at 018-789-8899. But we're heading into the 6:30 news bulletin. And to take us there is Grooving Out on Life by UB40, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Run. It is 6:38 in the morning, and that was Heroes by David Bowie, a very cool song.
Yeah, so we need more of them, actually.
You mean heroes?
Definitely.
Definitely.
Not zeros, heroes.
Yeah, heroes.
But in the meantime, at this time, we are looking at all the international headlines. Why don't we start with you, Chen Ni? What has caught your eye in the papers and portals?
The first one is China and US again. I just think that the two of them
besties, are besties, right, for life.
Yes, I know, exactly. And this is very interesting because US diplomats has actually asked China for the word they use here is authorized departure, so that they can allow the employees and the families to vacate the spots until it's safe to return. And China thinks that this is dirty trick that's designed to create panic just days before Winter Olympics is supposed to start. So, you know, the two of them are, of course, having a fight and all this kind of thing as usual. But I think it's a little bit interesting because China is doing the zero COVID policy, right? And they are, like, probably one of the country with, so far, the fewest amount of cases.
Yeah, because they don't let anyone in.
Exactly.
And then they don't let anyone out either, right?
Yeah, and here US asking for permission, can I leave? And I will only come back when it's safe to do so. So I don't know when they say safe to do so means the pandemic related, or is it some other threats that we are not know of?
I think it's a very interesting parallel to what you see in Ukraine as well, because the US is also saying to their US citizens and diplomats, you can leave the country because there's this whole tension and conflict between Russia and Ukraine. So, you know, just trying to draw parallels, right? I don't know whether they're the like for like. They are, you know, the US is asking both diplomats and to leave the country. But in China, what is the case actually for leaving? Is it about feeling safe? What is the logic there? Whereas for Russia and Ukraine, it's quite clear.
Yeah, you can see imminent danger, right?
You can.
Yeah, because it's like thousands of troops.
Exactly.
100,000 amassed on the border. So it is a serious situation there. I'm
correct.
Not sure whether the case is so strong for China in China for the US diplomats.
That's why I find this article quite interesting, because China called them back and said that this is a dirty trick. You're just trying to create panic.
Okay. What else has caught your eye, Philip?
Well, I want to stay on to the Russia-Ukraine issue, because I think that is, I think, riling also many elements, and also looking at oil prices, right, still on the very high 80s. US is now mulling sanctions on Putin.
Himself,
right? Because he's supposed to amass great wealth. And I think President Biden has announced a whole series of potentially huge economic sanctions on Russia if an incursion takes place in Ukraine. So watch this space. We're very worried what's happening over there.
Yeah, some even think that this could potentially start World War III, right? Because we haven't had this kind of level of conflict before. And increasingly, NATO and US are taking a bit more of a hard stance against Russia. Whether that will really happen, who knows? It could actually just be a little bit of a skirmish and everybody go back to their own sides of the borders.
Yeah.
Or it could really escalate.
I mean, that's what President Biden said. You know, he was warning there would be prompt enormous consequences and would even change the world. I mean, I think this is very ominous signs in my view that, you know, this is quite big. And this is a challenge really about NATO, the role of NATO here, and how does NATO basically play its role, and the membership of Ukraine into NATO. And that's been a big issue for Russia.
Well, I think Russia is definitely not happy because so many of these ex-republics of theirs, or, you know, have actually joined NATO. So NATO's membership in the last 10, 20 years has increased by 50%. Mm. So Russia, of course, wants to regain its superiority in the region and showing its muscle. But also Biden, I think, wants to undo some of the damage that Trump did, which was to look inwards versus outwards, right? And, of course, Trump was very good friends with Putin. So maybe this is part of the, I guess, gesturing.
Yeah. But I would also say it's also Biden trying to undo his record in Afghanistan,
yeah,
where he basically took,
right,
this, you know, exit policy from Afghanistan. Maybe he does need to flex some foreign muscular power to kind of exert that US is still in the fray in global events and affairs.
Anyway, okay, we got one news coming out of the US Supreme Court, so staying in the US. Stephen Breyer to retire from the Supreme Court, giving Biden the chance to pick a liberal judge. And it doesn't change the... because in the US, the Supreme Court, there's 9 justices. And currently, it's still very conservative, right? I think the ratio is 5-4. So it's not going to change the dynamics. But I think it'll be interesting to see who Biden nominates. And I think even the New York Times has suggested that it might be a black woman. A first.
That would be very interesting to see.
Yeah, and I find that's very interesting and I think consequential because, as you say, right, the current Supreme Court is quite conservative bent and Stephen Breyer has liberal credentials here. So the replacement, I think,
is likely to be a liberal.
And I think this is where the issue was last time, right, when Ruth Bader Ginsburg did pass away during President Trump's administration. And what President Trump did was he replaced a liberal justice with a conservative justice. So, you know, I think, as you say, right, this is really status quo, but I think a critical strategy to at least maintain some liberal justices in the U.S. Supreme Court.
And maybe reflect American society better, right? It's not always going to be white men.
Yes. A different perspective from the female side of things. I'm always pro that.
Well, I've got something from the South China Morning Post, and staying on your topic, actually, Chen Li, about Beijing. Beijing Winter Games, so far 106 COVID-19 cases in the Olympic bubble.
Already?
Wow. Yeah, already.
Wow.
So it looks like it's not going to be that easy for China to maintain this zero COVID policy because thousands and thousands of people are going to come and we're not talking about spectators, we're talking about actual athletes and all the officials.
I think time to live with COVID.
Yeah, and I think they have some strict rules as in like whoever they got a close contact and then they would actually trace down and whoever diplomat it is, you'll get 21 days of quarantine. I think that was one of the things that they imposed on all these diplomats coming into the country.
But I don't think it's the diplomats that are going to be the issue. I think it's the athletes because there's so many of them.
That's true. Right? That's very true.
Well, it's now 6:45. And when we come back, we're going to take a look at what's happening in the local scene. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. 6:49 in the morning and you're listening to The Morning Run with Philip C, Tan Chen Li and Wong Xiaoning. And that song is Pipes of Peace by Paul McCartney and I'm dedicating it to Putin. I think he needs it at the moment, doesn't he?
A lot of people need it, but he particularly needs it for sure.
Yeah, please, we don't need World War III, okay? World War II was bad enough, all right? And if we haven't learned any lessons, it's very, very sad. But in the meantime, we're focusing on the news in Malaysia. Chen Li, what has caught your eye?
I'm going on the whole COVID thing as usual. So Umrah trips is now allowed to resume from February 8th, right? I'm looking this correctly. Yeah. Yes, correct.
Our tourism minister announced it yesterday.
Yes, exactly. So I don't know.
Why were you nervous about it?
I think it's just, but if you allow travel, you should allow all kinds of travel.
But because on the other hand, Khairi is saying that the first wave of Omicron has arrived. So I'm not sure if this is...
If it's arrived, it's arrived.
Well, but you contrast it to actually what WHO also said, I think, a couple of days ago, where they say actually all these travel restrictions don't work as well.
It doesn't.
They have said it before as well. So it's very interesting, right, because you see the world relaxing and even recently in the UK, they have actually removed the requirements for you to get tested as you arrive. So people are relaxing
the
borders.
Like UK did that, right?
Correct. And even recently in Netherlands, right, with the Prime Minister, even with increasing Omicron cases, he's also relaxing current protocols. So I really get your concerns and hesitations, but I'm seeing a trend in the world that even despite rising cases, people are trying to go back to normality. That's a challenge.
It's endemic,
isn't it?
Right? This is just accepting that it's around us. Yeah. And just go with it, right?
But staying on the topic of COVID-19, I am a little bit concerned by this article in the Singapore Straits Times. And it's about the fact that there are COVID-19 clusters in Malaysia's education institutions. Mm. Apparently, teachers with COVID-19 symptoms still turn up for class, increasing the rate of infections. And even our Director General of Health, Tan Sri Noor Hisham Abdullah, said that they have detected 62 new clusters in education institutions last week, up from 15 the week before.
Yes,
is this bad SOPs though?
Yeah, and also discipline, right, in reporting and testing yourself rigorously. I think that's one of the biggest challenges. So I hope the teachers recognize that the best thing for them is to stay at home, no?
Yeah, because, you know, they, you know, it's, we are just about rolling out the vaccination program for children between the ages of 5 to 11. It's not really out yet completely, so children still remain vulnerable. So I think this is something to pay attention to.
Yeah.
What else has caught your eye there, Philip?
Well, we'll see you in court, because the ex-judges, according to The Star, will be suing the government for better increments over their pensions. Now, this will involve two former chief judges of Malaya and a former Court of Appeal president as a group of retired judges, because they're suing the government and three others over increment issues to their pensions and benefits. So these judges are going to see the government in court.
They're going to be on the other side for a change, right?
I wonder who's going to win the argument.
I don't know. I'm like, who's going to represent all these judges, right?
Yeah, I tell you, that lawyer better be on his ball or on her ball, you know, because they're going to scrutinize.
It's Chui and Ko and Chiang and Arif, according to the New Straits Times, and that's on page 9. But I think I want to talk a little bit about the Johor elections, right? And it's about the logo. Whose logo are we going to use? Well, PKR is going to contest using their own logo. Then Amanah and DAP will then stick with the Pakatan Harapan logo. What does this mean about from the opposition? Can't they get their act together?
I know. I saw that and I was quite perturbed by this. You know, I would have expected, you know, something like a logo would unify everybody. And, you know, PKR, I think
they were doing this Big Ten thing.
Big Ten thing, right?
Yeah.
Big Ten thing. And
the ten has collapsed. It's got holes.
It's got holes. And I'm surprised, actually, that PKR, who actually was leading the Pakatan Harapan charge, has decided to use its own logo. So what's happening here? And I think this sign of disunity doesn't really help. And we talked about this. They haven't done a good job in Sarawak. They didn't deliver in Malacca. And this doesn't really spell for good tidings in Johor as well.
No.
Bad start already.
And there's a lot of speculation, I think, out there that if UMNO does a really good job in Johor elections, it might cause the GE elections to come sooner rather than later, as soon as first half of this year.
Mm.
Who knows, right?
And yesterday you were talking about Muhyiddin, whether he would defend his Gambir seat. So it was already mentioned that he is not, and seems like they're gonna look for a candidate to replace him.
Yeah, and for me this is the big question, right? When I listened to that story and I listened to Pakatan Harapan, you know, I always thought this wasn't in the bag for UMNO or for Barisan Nasional, but many say it is in the bag. Essentially. So I'm wondering, what does this election mean, right? I think it's so consequential because you've got so many factors. You've got Muda, the Undi 18 element into it. You've had so much political developments happening in the past 6 months, even after Malacca, the debacle of the floods.
Yeah.
I really wonder whether, I think this state election is super consequential.
And we're also going to probably see Warisan enter peninsular Malaysia politics for the first time, right? And is the coalition really going to be the case where you've got UMNO in one camp, and then you've got PAS and Berjaya in one camp. Bersatu, not Berjaya, excuse me. And then, of course, you've got now Pakatan, DAP, and Amanah in one camp. And then in the fourth camp, could there be Warisan and Muda? Who knows, right?
Yeah. And I wonder, going forward, and we've had this conversation with so many political commentators before in the past, will coalition building take place before or after the results
of the possible polls? You could just run, see who wins, and then subsequently come to the table and say, okay, who wants to be a coalition partner, which is typical of European politics, right? It happens in Germany, it happens in Netherlands. In some way, it also still even happens in UK, right, with the Scottish parties. This could be the future of Malaysia. It's part of that, I guess, maturing democracy.
Yeah, and I guess if that is the case, then manifestos don't count to me then. Manifestos won't count. Because
so
what
then
happens
how would
is,
you vote? I'm curious. Would you vote then based on candidate, or would you vote based on party, or you vote based on mandate?
I would always want to vote based on candidate.
You, Philip C?
Candidate now. Because for me, if it's going to be coalition building post, it's about the candidate.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.